Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Ree Noragard, who is Managing Creative Director at SY Partners and host, no less, of the new podcast, Designing for Humanity. Hi, Ree. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I am splendid. Thank you very much. So, Ree, can you give us a little bit, can you introduce yourself to us and tell us a little bit about yourself and the work you do, just so we get a little bit of a background sort of sketch?
Certainly. I'm a designer by training. I'm from Copenhagen, Denmark, and that's where I trained as a designer at the School of Media and Journalism. So really a training around how to apply design to content and mm-hmm. how the two work together. That's my training, but I've always worked in very interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary environments with architects, industrial designers, and technologists. So quite early on, I became a creative director in that capacity, really like sitting in the middle of many different functions and looking at creativity and expressions across. And at SY Partners, I'm a creative director, managing creative director, and I work with the clients to bring into focus the future that they want to build so that we can see it and go build it together. And more specifically, I am focused on transformation through inclusion. And as inclusion seems to be the current design frame. I'm finding that the definitions and the conversation around inclusive design are perhaps not expansive enough for the very large scale and systemic problems that we as designers and creative problem solvers are finding ourselves being asked to help solve or to participate in. And that's what my podcast, Designing for Humanity, is about trying, you know, starting to explore what might be required of a new design frame that takes into account design on a global scale, potentially.
And so you actually kind of have answered my second question, which was the thing that brought us together is I became aware of your new podcast called Designing for Humanity. And the interesting thing I was thinking about when I first learned about it is this, because my primary interest is in mm-hmm. how do organizations sort of create, design, and deliver better outcomes for both their customers and their people. So it's kind of a broad uh-huh. sort of church. But the thing it seemed to me about the Designing for Humanity, and you talk about the inclusive design, it's almost a bit like mm-hmm. you're almost, it feels like with the podcast, you're being inclusive in trying to explore this by actually inviting some people to come on and actually give their view on what it means for them and how they've grappled with that sort of challenge. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely accurate. So I think that what I'm experiencing is that many people have parts of the solution through their lived experience, mm-hmm. and by addressing, which is by addressing a problem or an issue from many different angles at the same time, I'm starting to do some sense making.
Right.
So yeah. So by being very inclusive in my thinking, I'm looking for signs of ideas that will be useful towards this new design frame, perhaps, or not. I mean, that's the thing that with research is you don't know what you're going to find necessarily.
Yeah. No, that's kind of fair enough. I mean, but just if we can roll back a little bit, I mean, just for mm-hmm. my benefit, I mean, I'm not really scared of asking the dumb questions, but so let's, you know, let me ask the dumb questions, which is, can you explain to me, just so we get the right sort of frame and we understand what the platform that we're standing on, kind of what is it that you actually uh-huh. mean by sort of design and also kind of humanity? I mean, because they're words, they're big words, mm-hmm. but they will mean different things for different people, I suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is, to me, I think, well, to me, that's a three-part question at the moment from where I am in my exploration
okay.
towards a new frame. So I'll start with design, what design means. In this context, it means a method by which to creatively problem solve, and particularly in service of others.
Right.
So, yeah, that's my, which is a very broad definition of design, but that's my starting point for this purpose. I will say that there is a theme in my, both in my podcast and in my work that is also present and that I do explore to a certain extent, which is around expression and beauty, perhaps. And beauty is a quite difficult word to define and talk about right now, I think. But the topic of expression, mm-hmm. what makes a solution desirable and worthy, et cetera, is also very important, mm. right? So no process in the world ensures a great outcome. When it comes to making things that didn't exist before, for example,
mm-hmm.
or making something better. And on the other hand, one individual's expression when trying to solve a really complex problem might not either. So I think those are the two dimensions of design, and expression is very much linked to imagination when it comes to thinking about design in big systems. I think so that's it's a very different kind of quality and requires different conditions mm-hmm. to emerge than the very structured design process, in my belief. And then on the other side, you have humanity. And again, if we take the design frame of inclusive design, it is inherent in inclusion. It is also exclusion, right?
Yes.
So for some, not for others. And I guess, and that's my essential, that is at the root of my questioning. So when we as the human race, when we say that we make products for everyone, or everyone could be my customer, or then we are perhaps being inclusive, but is it true that we can consider everyone and everyone's needs and
sure.
have everyone as part of our consideration? Is that really true? And if it is, what conditions would need to be true for that for us to be able to think about it in that way? Because there's a big difference
mm-hmm.
To me. And the other meaning of humanity is the best in us, right? Like
right.
what we hold to be beautiful, worthy, and true about being human. And I think it's those two things together, you know, with the aspiration of spaceship Earth, perhaps, or, you know, every living being, or maybe at least humans on planet Earth, and the what we know to be beautiful and productive about being human beings. So that's a kind of a long answer, but that's actually a four-part answer, I guess.
No, thank you for that. I mean, because I thought, well, I think it's worthwhile not making assumptions about what we mean.
Totally.
Just to be clear.
Absolutely.
Because what you've actually described is both very aspirational, but also feels quite problematic in the times that we're living in, and therefore, and maybe it's also about there's a link between design and humanity, and designing for humanity, and also the agency that firms and organizations can have in terms of identifying challenges and then also being able to use that agency to try and solve those kind of challenges in the absence of other agents, as it were.
Yeah.
So we talked about design, we talked about humanity, and that's kind of fine. So we understand where we were at. But I guess you talked about this idea about transformation for inclusion sort of and design, and the way that we're going about it is not expansive enough. So I wonder if you can help me in understanding what is the central challenge that you think that we're facing and that you're trying to address, just so I'm clear about the two things, and then also kind of what's the objective, as it were.
The objective is to help us think about the consequences of design decisions that we're making when we are designing solutions for a very large scale, global scale, where we can understand fairly immediately the effects of the decisions that we make on people and markets and places that are not in our purview necessarily when we're looking at optimizing an experience or product for a segment of a population or for a particular someone with a particular user profile.
And then particularly you'll get into intended and unintended consequences behind all of that as well.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think design in many ways is about designing, well, we're designing the future, right? So we approach with an inherently optimistic outlook, and we have adopted this, this notion of prototyping and prototyping in many ways in the market, right? Like launching and learning. And that's a very useful thing in terms of making ideas stronger and better and more powerful. The problem is, especially with products that are digital in nature or more enabled by technology and connected, is that the moment they exist, right?
Right.
And the effect of the design that is made is not something that you can take back. Like, that is a design frame from physical products. Right, you can make something, and then the cycle to make it better to have a new generation of a product is defined.
Yes.
By the physicality of it, but that's not true of services, for example. And we're seeing that in some of our favorite services and with our favorite technology companies all over the world now, the consequences and unintended consequences of business models and technology applied as a neutral way to develop a product or service. And we're finding out that there are many unintended consequences, for example.
Yeah. So let's go back to the podcast, and you talked about you wanted to investigate kind of what designing for humanity can mean and how can we make things more inclusive. So tell me, have you interviewed so far? Because you've just started on this journey, really, you're quite early in the game. But so who have you interviewed so far, and what have you learned?
Yeah, that's usually my question. What have you learned? But I'll take it. I started investigating from the perspective of the discipline of design and universal design and inclusive design. So practitioners in design, in universal design, and people who have come into contact with design through the topic of inclusion. So one of my first victims was Tucker Wehmeister, who was an industrial designer we were on the same team, actually, a long time ago, a small team that made a series of kitchen tools called OXO. and that were based on the principles of universal design, and essentially sparked a new category of kitchen tools and became, you know, a transformative and iconic business. And so to sort of to retrace our steps and see where we came from. Now, what I learned during that very first episode when I asked Tucker about his background and how he came into how he came to understand the power of design for himself, he described his childhood and with his father being an industrial designer and his mother being a social worker, how that really informed how he looks at design. And he says in the episode, he says, well, design is how we treat each other. And this was a remark in a conversation, but to me, that is definitely a description of this much broader design frame, that it's not just the solutions that we're making, but it's also how we think about how we make them and why we make the things that we make. So if design is how we treat each other, then it, I think it helps us think about the fact that everything around us is a design, by design. You know, from nation states to the glass with water next to me, we have designed these things, which also means that we can redesign them. But when they appear on that scale and all around us, we sometimes don't notice, and we think that they're fixed, and that that they're part of, I don't know, almost maybe like a natural order, right? And we see that in social structures a lot when we have to question if the values that upon which we created a lot of structures, if they're really serving us, and if they're not, we have to change them, which is very hard.
Absolutely, design is a way that we treat each other. I think that, I mean, it's a wonderful little kind of snippet, and it reminds me of something because I think about it from service and experience and how do we serve our customers and all their experiences and stuff. But it also reminds me of a phrase that somebody taught me some time ago, which says, true communication is the response we get. And I think it seems to be the same sort of way, because sometimes it feels like people design things but not necessarily considering how they're going to be, we think we know how they're going to be used but actually don't really understand how they're going to be used. It's almost a bit like when we communicate, sometimes we pick the words and we go, I've communicated well because I've picked the right words. We go like, but if it's to the wrong person at the wrong time in the wrong context, as it were, then it's just going to fall flat.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's in the relationship that you know.
Yes.
And I think that's absolutely true of what I'm saying. Also, see, this conversation is really helping me clarify my thinking. It's fantastic.
Excellent. So, who else apart from Tucker have you? I mean, no pressure. I don't want classic vignette kind of out of it, but you've set the bar quite high.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I've talked to a disability advocate, Sinead Burke, who's actually now she has a column in British Vogue, and she talks about how design has impacted her life and in two ways. And, you know, she stands 3.5 foot tall, so navigating life through that or in as a grown-up.
Yes.
A grown woman at that height just comes with a number of challenges, and she, through her stories, we really start to understand much better what we just talked about, which is that everything is designed.
Yes.
But the way that she comes into contact with it just impacts her life in a whole different way than you and I, and lets us see that more clearly, and it's super helpful. The other way she comes into contact with design is that she's a fashion blogger, and now, you know, part of the editorial team at Vogue. And so she also talks about her love for design and the conversation we're having is how design and fashion in this sense is an amazing vehicle for transformation, in the sense that fashion can help us change our idea of what beauty is.
Yes.
Who's worthy. And that's a very useful idea for humans, because because we also operate on that level. And then on the other hand, I'm talking with an educator who's a director of the K-12 lab, so that's elementary education at the D School at Stanford, about design experiments that she's making to create more equitable classrooms, both on that smallest unit, right, teacher to classroom system, but also using that as a model for those smaller experiments as a model for transformation of the system. So that's a very different aspect. So how does design show up in industrial design? How does it show up in disability and in fashion? How does it show up in education? How does it show up in disaster relief? I'm speaking to a consultant to FEMA about disaster relief, and how this consultant has discovered that including designers in the process of imagining what recovery looks like from disaster has been very eye-opening to her. And I love her perspective of she's not saying that, oh, with enough post-its, then that all the amazing people at FEMA will become designers or design thinkers. She's saying we're great at planning, we're great at projecting, but we're not good at imagining what the human experience is, and we're not good at telling stories about how to recover. And designers are really good at that. So that to me was also very insightful and very important. Mm. An episode that's not out yet, but up next, so I'll tell you about it, is I'm speaking to a creative director from a design firm that designs a lot of the interfaces that we see in science fiction movies.
Right.
And this is where I talk about imagination, really. What are the qualities of imagination, and what are, you know, design is such a powerful tool for imagining the future. Mm-hmm. And we do that all the time in sci-fi movies. Now, it's a very particular kind of future that we mostly see, and we talk about that on the episode, right? Like making art for all these really dystopian versions of the future that we see in science fiction, and what that is like. But the ability to imagine the future and to imagine many different futures at the same time is something that type of thing is really engaged in. And so that's a very different kind of conversation, but to me also a very important aspect.
Absolutely. I mean, so it seems like there's implications for what you're talking about. It's almost like a micro and a very macro kind of level, but in all aspects, it feels like, I mean, it makes me wonder, because I'm very interested in systems thinking, mm-hmm. how things are connected, mm-hmm. and things, but it also makes me think about what you're talking about and I wonder if how that's related to sort of systemic design, which seems to be, and it's this emergent discipline which is smashing, yep. together systems thinking and design thinking.
Yep. Absolutely.
Is that right?
And I think I think that's absolutely, correct. And I think that the FEMA example sits right there in the middle of that.
Right.
Right? The ability to think for very large scale systemic events and systems for how to, in this case, recover from unforeseen or from what we consider to be disasters. That is different than the ability to design the solution for,
sure.
humans, and for understanding behaviors, understanding patterns, understanding how to make something work best is a very different thing to tap into. So I think you're absolutely right. It is the convergence or the coming together of the two, or maybe three things, because when I'm focused on interface design and science fiction, I'm really talking about the ability to storytell,
right.
In ways that help us move towards the solution or not. And the stories that we tell visually and not in writing and entertainment so much are again, they're part of our vernacular in a way that we don't necessarily analyze and address all around us, but they reaffirm or challenge our belief around our own presence in the world and also about what the future may look like.
Yeah. Right?
So very powerful tool. How might we use this tool in a different way to help us paint pictures of the future that we actually do want, not just the ones from where things blow up and everyone need to leave the shuttle and get into the escape pods very quickly.
Yeah. It feels like kind of storytelling becomes a vehicle for change as well.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, it's a very essential human vehicle for change is the vehicle of rituals, or, and we need stories around the rituals to help us create change.
Excellent.
And in our belief systems, we have stories.
Mm-hmm. So, like I said to you before, I mean, my primary area of interest is about creating, you know, better outcomes for people mm-hmm. and their for customers and the people that work in organizations, and that manifests itself in terms of better service and experience, engagement, and things. So, what do you think are some of the implications of what you're finding out for people with that sort of same focus, or people that are in that professional, you know, within those kind of swim lanes of service or experience and engagement?
Mm-hmm. So I think the application, the practical implication, I'm really glad you asked, because it's so important to, like, when you open up a big, expansive conversation to go, okay, well, what could my next step be, or how might I move forward here too? So I think recognizing that even inclusion or having an expansive approach to problem solving, as in what kind of thinking
mm-hmm.
Do we need to solve problems? I think that's essential. So whether that's neuroscience or science fiction or behavioral science or human factors or microbiology or urban planners, or disaster relief experts coming together with
yes.
deep expertise in different areas to problem solve creatively. The more we know, and the more we put minds together, the greater the chance of actually finding solutions that are perhaps many steps away from what you would achieve if you had fewer perspectives together.
Yes.
At one time. So I think that's an implication for everyone. Who's in the room, or who's around the table, who's on the project, who do you include? Use a frame into the process of design and innovation.
Mm.
Think more expansively about that. I think that's a very useful tactic. And then there is something, I mean, we talk about co-design also. There's something about the history of design and the power dynamic of what we call design thinking right
mm-hmm.
now that is worth just stopping and questioning. So when you take a methodology that puts you, project owner, company, solutions provider, in the center, essentially, right, as
mm-hmm.
the decision maker, as the entity that frames the problem
mm-hmm.
and evaluates the solution, then you have a really fixed power dynamic, even when you're saying that you're including your customers or, you know, you're including your entire company in what you're doing, then the power structure is set in a certain way that really determines the outcome and reinforces status quo in many cases. I mean, I think we actually have to look at that when we're designing for systems. Also, if we're doing it within an existing frame where the structure and the power dynamic is set, we're not going to innovate perhaps in the way that's needed.
Yeah. So it's you know, it's fascinating because you mentioned kind of that, and I was thinking about how we understand and sort of frame the problem and use design as part of that, and it reminds me of a time where I was this is years and years and years ago, and I was working for one of the big energy companies, and one of their research team, a friend of mine worked there, and he was a guy called Steve, and they were looking at traffic and traffic flows and congestion and things. And the interesting thing is that they decided that the what they were seeing when they were looked at all the data and the flows and they just observed is that actually they went and investigated what they could learn from fluid dynamics to inform how they understood traffic flows. And is that the right sort of kind of am I in the right sort of
I mean, I think that idea if you look back to obviously the legacy of Buckminster Fuller, right? The idea of biomimicry,
looking
to nature as the way to inform what we're doing. It's that, but it's actually the ability to look at adjacency. That's the quality here, right? To understand, to study, and to understand systems. That are not the same, but that are next to and mine them for available information, and then to see what's transferable to a situation and what's not. So absolutely about biomimicry, but at the same time, we're also looking inward, right? Like we're looking into our own brains and have a greater understanding on how we exist in relationship to the world around us, which is largely why things are the way they are at the moment, right?
Yes.
So I think it's both, and I think it's one of the big differences or one of the powerful things about this moment is that we can, you know, we can look to data that we're generating around us. And soon, or we are already in relationship with artificial intelligence that will be able to generate and analyze data in ways that our human brains can't really frame at the moment, I don't think. But we can understand ourselves a little bit better, and then we can look at systems around us and use all of those inputs to imagine a way forward through very complex systems. System thinking.
Okay. So, I mean, if I build on the last question I asked you around the sort of what are the implications for people that have that service experience engagement, sort of design, creation, and delivery things. If I was to say to you that I've got people that are in those sort of roles, have that sort of, those sort of responsibilities and interests and passions and things, and I was to say to you, well, okay, that's kind of fine. But this feels like it's you know there's a lot going on here. It's a big conversation. But I guess my question would be, where should they start? What sort of things should they start doing to try and almost embark on this journey and almost like learning a new way of seeing in many ways or in thinking?
I love that. We're getting to sort of, putting one foot in front of the other and where to start. So I'll go back to and really say again, think about who is thinking about it with you. I really think how we structure teams,
right,
and how we set ourselves up even within an organization is very meaningful in generating a new perspective. So are they people with similar background as you or not, right?
Yes.
Do you have the same depth and level of expertise or not? And to really to start to question and look into what perspectives are maybe missing. It's sometimes easier to see what's not there.
Yes.
So that to me is always a good starting point. And then there is one... I think there's a dimension in design that is very related to the work that we're doing at SYP currently, is to recognize that we are also the work that we do, right? And so if we use good methodology, then we'll be good at projectizing what we're doing. But we are in relation to what we're doing at all times, which means that you are also the work that you do, or I am the work that I do.
Yes.
And, And so this is where I think Tucker B. Meister's comment of design is how we treat each other comes in. Also. So what are the dynamics of your team? What are the conditions for the for actually making the best solution possible? What's the relationship? How do you work together? And so the ability to model what we want, the right response, like you're saying, within the way we imagine and that we do our work, I think is also a very practical way of changing our minds about what design is.
Absolutely.
And I think we're seeing that for organizations so much where we as consumers and as people working in organizations, we want to have a level of transparency and of thinking and doing on the outside of an organization as well as on the inside, right?
Yes.
So that value, you know, the values that we create a business on that exists between the user and a service or a company and a customer, that they're also true and exist on the inside of the company, from the company to the people that work there, from the team to the larger team, from the organization to the end user. And I think that's a really good thing. Because I think it addresses something very essential in our lives, is the ability to bring together aspects of our life and to be a whole person. And it's a useful way of thinking when we think about the things that we make for other people too. So if we want for ourselves what we want for others, or we want for others what we want for ourselves, then how do you actually practice that in your work and in how you do your work?
What a great example. Thank you. So, Ree, I'm just thinking about conscious of time and things. And so I wanted to ask you, is there anything else that you'd like to add that you found out along your kind of journey that you think that we've kind of possibly missed out before I ask you my final question?
I think there's an interesting question around, which there's an episode where I talked to a designer named Kat Holmes, and she spent her life and she is dedicating her life to really studying and practicing inclusive design in technology products, especially coming out with a book shortly on her journey and what she learned while writing this book. And we have a conversation around where transformation happens within different organizations, and that's maybe another aspect to pay attention to. So if it's a company and organization that makes products, then the best way to change the culture of that organization is in how the product is made, actually, because that's what informs the whole body that is the organization, right? It's focused on that. It's the every process is geared towards that. The value of individuals and relationship to that has to do with the product and how the product is made. But that's not true of every organization. It may sit somewhere else, right? Like where to affect change? Where is the, you know, where are the vital organs, if you will, or where are the beliefs held? It's different from organization to organization. So when we talk about how to go about creating change for people who make services, I think that's another interesting aspect. Well, it depends. It depends on the organization and where the possibility for change actually really exists. I think it is in every organization. It just depends on the culture that's already there.
Sure.
Type of organization. So I think that's an interesting topic. But anyway, so to your last question.
Well, thank you for that. And so, Ree, my final question that I always ask at the end of these interviews, and the question is this: is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Well, I would love for other people who think about these topics to take a listen to one of the episodes of my podcast, Designing for Humanity. because I really started to learn myself, but also to engage the design community at large in the work of generating a new design frame together. It's obviously not something I'm going to do by myself, and nor is it something a small group of people should be doing. It's exactly the point. Really seeking input and dialogue with people who are interested in this topic also.
Marie, I will make sure I get all that edited up and linked up and give the podcast and your investigation, as it were, to Designing for Humanity a big shout out. I think it's a fascinating topic. There's all, and it's very timely and really, really interesting, and I can see big implications for my area and the stuff that I'm interested in, and I'm sure my audience will get a lot from this as well. But on the back of that, I just want to say congratulations on the work that you do and the podcast, and thank you so much for sharing your time and experience with us today. That's been splendid.
You're so welcome, and talking to you has really helped me think about it. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new, and I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adriansmusko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.